Welcome to Jam Live, the show featuring concerts and events presented by Junction Arts and Music Society in Haines Junction, Yukon. I am Maria Leniak. Since 2003, the Kluane Mountain Bluegrass Festival has presented amazing music from the finest artists in bluegrass, such as James King, Michael Cleveland, and Claire Lynch. And for the first time this year, Jam Live recorded some of the fantastic performances for this radio show. As in most musical genres, the bluegrass sound is colored by the musician's personal life and their lives as professional musicians. We thought you would be interested in exploring with us some of this background. So, who better than past producer of the Bluegrass Festival, Steve Gedrose, to get together for a chat with members of each of the five bands Jam Live is featuring from this year's festival. In this episode, Steve is talking to the six members of Flat Lonesome from Florida. This is one fun young band that is taking the bluegrass world by storm with a new and fresh approach to bluegrass music while staying true to their traditional essence. The group consists of brother and sisters Buddy, Charlie, and Kelsey, and their friends Dominic, Michael, and Paul, who is married to Kelsey. We caught up with the band during the festival on June 13, 2015, at the crowded St. Elias Convention Center in Haines Junction.
My name is Steve Gedrose, and we are here coming to you live from the 2015 Kluane Mountain Bluegrass Festival here in downtown Haines Junction, Yukon. I'd like to start by welcoming Flat Lonesome to the Yukon.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming all this way to play for us.
Oh, I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. I think maybe the best thing is just go around the circle and everybody introduce themselves and say what you play in the band.
Great. My name is Michael Stockton, and I play the dobro.
Hi, I'm Buddy Robertson, and I play guitar, and I sing lead vocals and harmony.
I'm Charlie Robertson, I play fiddle and sing lead and harmony vocals.
I'm Kelsey Harrigal, I play mandolin and sing lead and harmony.
I'm Paul Harrigal, I play the banjo and talk.
I'm Dominic Illingworth, I play the bass and do all the musical narratives on the album.
I want to add to mine that I drive a lot.
Okay, that's good. That's
I'm Michael.
Important role. I know that how important band names are in bluegrass and in any genre, and I'm going to go really out on a limb here and say that this is Flat Lonesome is about Lester Flat and the high lonesome sound that Mr. Bill Monroe coined as the vocal sound of bluegrass. It was really funny to read in What's Up Yukon that you just thought Scrubs Lonesome wasn't gonna get it.
Yeah, that was a little bit odd.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. I know that how important that is, and that's a great name, I think. I know that you've won a number of awards, but I'd like to congratulate you on the 2014 IBMA Emerging Artist Award. That's a very
big deal. Thank you.
What does that kind of recognition from your peers mean to you guys?
Everything.
Yeah.
It was great for us. We have only been a band, you know, a little over 4 years. So at that time, it hadn't even been 4 years yet. And for us to, you know, go into this just thinking maybe we can have some fun playing music together and maybe one day even make a little bit of money. That's high hoping for bluegrass, I know. But so, you know, to win something that's member voted, you know, is completely different than the fan voting, which is like Stigma, you know, in Nashville.
Absolutely, yeah.
Which is, again, is, you know, a huge honor.
Of course.
But to have people that, like you said, are our peers and also people that we've looked up to, you know, that we know probably played a huge part, and that is a real honor for us.
And it happened so fast, too.
Yeah.
Is that so?
We don't really, none of us really have like a deep heritage in bluegrass. You know, I mean, like our parents have played, but not professionally toured.
Right.
So nobody knew who we were when we started. We didn't have like a foot in the door. So it's
right.
So it was just kind of amazing to us that everything just took off so fast.
Yeah.
It's been a fun ride. So
great. I was going to talk to you about that. I know there are family connections in the band. Is that a good thing or a bad thing on the road?
Depends on the day.
Okay.
How long we've been awake.
Okay.
Which family member it is.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a great thing, I think, for us. And, you know, some family members, I think, cannot travel together. As a matter of fact, our managers are husband and wife, and they cannot. They could not ever. They can't hardly be in a jam session together without getting a divorce. So,
right.
But, you know, for us, it's, we were in a family band before, you know, the three of us siblings, so we had kind of, and actually Dominic, too, he played bass in our family band for quite a long time.
Okay.
Yes,
so
yes.
We had already had a little bit of a taste of that before, minus the stress of our parents being, our parents were the nervous ones all the time.
Okay.
So, yeah. So we were just like, oh, we'll just get up there and play and we'll be fine, you know, but... and then, you know, we added, Paul was not in the band, the banjo player wasn't in the band from the beginning.
Right.
We were already engaged before he joined the band. And so that was, you know, going to be a little bit of a different dynamic in the beginning, but we're such different personalities that I think it just kind of levels out. He's the very laid back, whatever you guys want to do, I'll just, you know, follow your lead to, you know, most degrees. So...
Kelsey's more in charge. She likes to take the reins in any situation.
Somebody's got to keep it all.
I think that's true, actually. I really do.
So, yeah, I think it works out well for us. And we all, you know, we have our days like everybody else. We spend hours and hours in a van together.
Of course.
Everybody's going to have their bad days and bad moments. But we get along very well, and we are, you know, each other's best friends. We spend time together when we're not on the road, which right now isn't very much.
Right.
On the road all the time.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, so we enjoy it.
Great. Were you encouraged by your family to become professional musicians?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I think that's probably kind of rare, I think.
It totally is. That's why I asked.
Yeah, most parents, you know, obviously this is a good thing, you know, would encourage their children to go through college and make it a priority.
I think our parents knew better.
that wasn't
going to
happen.
Don't waste your money.
Okay.
Well, our parents... You know, and I think I can speak for all of our parents, but I know, you know, the three of us, siblings for sure, our dad told us that music is not going to be there forever.
Yes.
And once the opportunity shows itself, you kind of have to take it while it's there.
Yes.
So, you know, college will always be there.
Yeah.
You can study till you're blue in the face at any time. Excuse me, Paul's getting in my comfort zone right now. Well, they're wondering why I'm stuttering, probably. So, yes, they did encourage us to, you know, pursue the music as much as we wanted to. And even growing up, you know, my dad was... It was not an option to practice in our house.
Okay.
It was a daily activity. The rule was if our room was a mess or if it was time to go to bed, if we were playing music, it didn't matter.
Okay.
So...
That's encouraging.
We tried to take that a little farther, and then he'd have to rein us back in, but...
Right,
you know.
Right.
So, but yeah, all of our parents are so supportive, and they've given us and given up so much for us to be able to do this, and they are all of our biggest supporters, for sure.
That's great. That's really great. What is it about siblings singing together that's so special? Can you guys identify that?
Well, I really can't stand my sister. No, I'm kidding. I don't know. I guess it's, to me, if you ask my opinion, which, you know,
which I am.
Right, yeah. Well, I mean, it's not valued by a lot of people. You just don't know me yet.
Yeah.
No, for me, it's just the doing it so much. We, you know, we sang together growing up, so it's kind of like, you know... Like, we could mess up a song on stage.
Which we do a lot.
Yes, we do that every show. But we can mess something up on stage and recover it without it being too much of a disaster because I always know what they're going to do.
Okay.
You know
yeah.
what I mean?
There's
it's kind
okay.
of a second a nature thing.
Yeah, yeah. Almost like muscle memory with the instruments, except we kind of, like you said, we always know where we're going.
Right.
We actually did that in a... band competition. I don't know if it was the first year or the second year.
It was the year we won, wasn't it?
Yeah, the year we won, actually. We went out on a limb in this competition
surprise.
And did an original song that
okay.
Paul wrote, which is not usually done in band competitions.
It's usually covers?
Yes.
It's always covers?
Yes, because the judges like to be familiar with what they're judging.
Okay,
you know,
that makes sense.
Kind of hard to judge a song that you've never heard before.
Of course.
It's kind of like judging a book without its cover.
Exactly.
Sure.
You know,
to
each his own. So we went out on a limb and did that. We felt like it was a very traditional feel, and you know, it was a three-quarter time, so everybody, you know, usually draws to that kind of a song anyways. And we completely omitted an entire fiddle break and chorus. And of the three of us who sing, had no idea until we finished the competition.
Oh, we were freaking out.
They were
yeah,
freaking out.
Of course.
They're thinking they don't know when they're going to come
back. I didn't
back
even
in
play my break, and I thought I nailed it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Charlie, actually, I remember that. Charlie got off stage. She was like, guys, that was awesome.
Paul
was like,
yeah, you didn't.
What are you talking about?
You didn't even play.
Well, no kidding.
That's why I did so good. Yeah, yeah. So it was.
Didn't even mess up.
You know, we. I think Buddy is definitely right about being able to, you know, we recover a little bit better. We know
I'm right.
When we're practicing too, we kind of always have a feel of where we're going to be, where
yeah
we're going to go if we're arranging a new song or something like that. So I think it does give us maybe a little bit of an advantage. But
kind of like when a sports team has that kind of chemistry.
I was just going to think of that analogy. The guy knows where the other guy is on the court
yep
or on the rink
yes
or whatever it is. Yeah. Okay, yeah, great. And that's more about growing up together than being related, almost, isn't it?
I would say so, yeah, because, I mean, we're not related to Dominic and Michael, but we've played together for so many years, even before we were a band, that musically, we know. We
yeah
know when, you know, we're going to drive a part of a song or when Michael may end a song or, you know, if it's something like if we're in a jam session, just playing new stuff. And sometimes we throw stuff in on stage that we had no idea we were going to play.
Right, right.
And that's just...
I literally did that last night.
Yes, we actually did. But that's where that comes in, I think, like
sure
you said, just being together all the time and playing together constantly. And I like that. I like the freedom of being able to do that on stage, not having to be so rehearsed. A lot of people... And it is good to be rehearsed. I'm not saying don't be rehearsed.
No, I understand.
We like to know our material, and we like to know, you know, we like to have a set list and know exactly what's coming up and what we're playing. So
of course
that way, if we do want to switch a song around or something like that, we at least have a roadmap of where we're headed. So it's I have too much OCD not to have some structure.
Okay, well, that kind of leads me to how do you do your arrangements? Does everybody have a say on what their part is, or does somebody suggest, let's do it like this?
Well, we're normally working out new material. We'll kind of all get in the same room, listen to the song if it's a new one to everybody, kind of see what everybody's ideas are, then play it through a few times, because just doing it one time, you know, you don't always get a good feel for
of course
it. You might mess up or something.
Yeah.
So we'll go through a few times. Somebody has another idea, we'll try it and just kind of build from there, and usually works out for us in the end.
Sometimes
okay
there's a little bit of back and forth, but
there's some compromise.
Sure,
some
everything's a compromise. Yeah, sure.
And we all actually have a lot of the same mindset on
okay
all of our music. I think we all have the same path that we want to take, and that's a good thing to have, you know, having all of that in common. So, and Michael actually has a lot of vocal ideas for the three of us that we don't always hear.
Okay.
So
yeah, I don't even sing.
Yeah, yeah, right.
It's good to have that, though, I think.
Of course.
Having somebody that doesn't do the singing, somebody who's objectively looking at it. So, yeah, we all are in there giving our input, and it doesn't always get used sometimes,
yeah,
you know. We had to learn not to put our feelings out there with our, you know, opinions.
Sure.
So,
sure.
What's cool about this
sure
band, too, I think, is that nobody's trying to be like a solo, hey, put me out front,
okay,
let me be the kind of thing. Everybody's
band
complimenting
effort
each other.
Yeah.
You know?
I think
yeah
we learned that after our first album. I think our first album, we wanted that. We were trying to show everybody what we could do because nobody knew who we were.
Sure.
And I think the last album, Flat Lonesome 2, started the band. Here's who we are as Flat Lonesome.
Yeah.
And with the third album we just finished, that is not going to be out until maybe September, October, is even a step up from that, I think. Not saying, you know, not patting ourselves on the back, just saying as a band, you know, our band as a whole, it's so much more cohesive than the last two albums.
Right. Well, that's kind of what that feeds into this. I looked at the little video about making two.
Yes.
And I think it was Kelsey that said that's your grown-up record. Is that kind
yes
of what you're talking
felt
about?
Felt a lot like
for
it
sure.
I feel
yeah
like our first album was our, like the first one, the second was the grown-up one, and this one's kind of like our professional one.
Wow,
yeah,
great.
The first album was like, hey, they're cute, look what they can do.
Yeah, yeah.
The second one, we were all, I think, very nervous about, because you don't want to have that sophomore slump. You know,
well, exactly, it's, yeah.
And, you know, after the first album, it's not so cute anymore. You're
right
kind of in it for real, and so this third one, I think, for us was almost like we could breathe with this album. You
okay
know, people, we've got two albums out, and you know,
kind of
we don't
establish our own sound.
Yeah, we didn't want to go to the extremes because we are extremists. I think all of us are extremists. We like to push that just a little bit. So we did. We put a little bit of, you know, flair in there, I guess, some hardcore stuff. But there is a ton of traditional bluegrass and country on it, which is who we are.
Right.
I mean, we love the traditional country, I think, just as much as we love the bluegrass part of it.
Right.
So I think that it shows who we are as Flat Lonesome even more than the second one.
So when you're starting on a project like this, does everybody bring tunes?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Pretty much.
Yeah, we...
Covers or...
Both.
Okay.
We're serious about having original material on there.
Of course.
You know, having said that, we don't put it on there just because we wrote it either. If it doesn't fit the album or if it just stinks,
right.
You know? I mean, because Paul and I do most of the writing so far. We've done most of the writing for our albums.
Okay.
And, you know, we bring it out there and say, look, you got to be honest. You got to tell us what you think about it. And
we'll tell us, too.
We don't.
We'll tell them.
Because I have a song on the very first one that... Now I listen to it, I'm thinking, what was I thinking?
Is that right?
No,
you
don't
like to listen to
that.
It?
No, I think it's fine to listen to it recorded, but we started doing it live, and I got bored with myself halfway through the song every time we did it. I'm like, if I'm bored
That's a sign.
Yeah, everybody else, you know, so we kind of eased that one on out of the set list, but, you know, yeah, we try to have as much original music as we can, as long as it fits what we're trying to do in the album.
Okay.
We have a lot of songs that we had on our list that we've wanted to do that we just didn't record yet because it wasn't in fitting with, you know, the other music we were doing. Yeah.
Okay.
All of our albums have a little bit of a different vibe, I think.
Okay, so you're kind of looking at a lot of people talk about this musical art, that you're kind of taking your listener on a journey.
Yeah, you definitely are, and you want to look at your album as a whole.
Sure.
You know, you don't want to have 10 upbeat songs.
Yes.
And you want to make sure. We like to put people on emotional roller coasters, you
sure.
know, in
sure.
our shows.
Sure.
And I like the songs that make you want to hurt yourself. They're so sad. You know,
right.
I enjoy singing those songs. And, you know, getting in the studio, turning all the lights off, and just, you know, crying through the song or whatever. You know, not for real crying, but, you know.
Yeah, I get it. Sure.
I do turn all the lights off. But,
yeah.
You know, so, you know, you got to have all those different songs and, like, the Texas Swing song that we did on the last album and, you know, just stuff like that. So you want to make sure that all of that fits together.
Right, right. Well, I watched that little video about Crossroads Studios in mm-hmm. Arden, North Carolina. It looked like a really... cool place. Is that where you recorded the third one as well?
Yes, sir. We've recorded all of our stuff there so far. We're, you know, we're on Mountain Home Music Company.
I was just going to get to that. That's a big deal in itself.
Oh, yeah. We
have Balsam Range has been here a couple times. They're real good pals of ours, and I see the Boxcars are on there. Doyle Lawson and Quicksilver. That's big company.
It's humbling for us.
Meant for you guys, that connection?
That was such a huge thing for us. That's one thing I was saying that Michael was saying, with how fast everything has happened. You know, we were on a different division with Crossroads,
yes.
His garage.
Right.
In the beginning, and we fought so hard. Not really fought. We almost, you know, begged. You know, we were like, just jokingly, the label there is very family oriented, so it's not like pulling teeth to get to talk to the big man, you know, the man on top.
Yeah.
He's always there. He's
mm-hmm.
always around.
Okay.
We all have his personal phone number, that kind of thing.
Right.
So, you know, we were constantly texting him and emailing him, you know, I really think Flat Lonesome 2 needs to be on Mountain Home.
Right.
Really, you know, so it wasn't until after we finished that record that we actually signed with them and signed that CD to Mountain Home.
Oh, I see.
And not Pisgah Ridge.
Okay.
And when we did that, that was a huge day for us.
Right.
And knowing that in less than 3 years, we were put on a label with people we looked up to, and we would drive down the road listening to them, thinking and telling each other, what if we got to play the same festival as them?
Right.
You know, much less be on the same label.
Literally, musical legends.
Yeah,
Lonesome
River Band.
Absolutely. So did you pursue them? Is that kind of how that went down?
No, not in the beginning. When we first went with Pisgah Ridge, their marketing director, Ty Gilpin, actually saw us at Spigma the year we won.
Okay.
And he came up to us and just said, you know, we want to get with you guys and just talk to you about what you want to do and what your goals are. And, you know, we'd like to maybe work with you guys. And so, you know, you hear that, and with us being as new into it as we were, you just try not to put too much into what people tell you. You know, you don't want to get your hopes up, kind
of course.
Thing, you know? Because we did that with another situation in the beginning, and it was not what it turned out to be. It wasn't bad.
Okay.
It wasn't a bad scenario. It was just kind of not as glamorous as what we thought it was going to be.
Sure.
So when we first started out with them, you know, took the trip out to North Carolina, we knew that it was going to be with Pisgah Ridge, but it was just supposed to be an EP, just maybe four or five songs.
Right.
And our manager, which is, you know, who she's Andrea Roberts. Danny Roberts is her husband.
Okay.
Plays for the Grascals.
Okay.
And, she is the reason why we are here.
Okay.
No joke. I mean, not just here in the Yukon, but as a band. I mean, she has pushed us and helped us and pretty much educated us on everything.
She's put us in front of the right people and kept us away from the wrong people.
Okay.
Yes, for sure.
You mean like showcasing and things like that?
Showcasing or getting us with...
Just personal relationships and...
Yeah. Her and Danny were a big component in getting us with Mountain Home. Just things like that.
Yeah.
They were the reason that we got the world premiere of our first CD on the Track by Track with Kyle Cantrell on Bluegrass Junction on XM Radio.
Okay.
And still to this day, I cannot tell you how many people say that that's the first place they heard us.
No kidding.
And just stuff like that.
And still, one of the biggest things we hear is they hear us on Sirius, and of course we're thankful for them playing us, but even Danny and Andrea, back to the first Spigma competition, you know, they were the ones who advised us to do that competition, the first place we ever played as a band.
Helped us pick out the songs, helped us arrange.
Prepared us for that, gave us the idea to do that. So it's,
and like she was saying, when we were doing our first album, it was supposed to be an EP, and they gave us about 4 or 5 days. And she said to have 11 songs ready.
So we
knocked everything out. Well, we had 10 songs ready. We knocked everything out in 3 days.
Right.
And then they set the mics back up the fourth day because they wanted us to do one more, and it turned out to be a full album.
Wow.
Yeah,
great.
She was determined that it was not just going to be an EP. So she, you know, she's like, well, they don't know this, but we're going to go in there and do a full album. So we had probably 4 or 5 rehearsals before we went to the studio. We knew every song forwards and backwards. Who was playing where, you know, which is the only reason we were able to record a full CD in 3 days.
Of course.
It was just...
It's too expensive to work that stuff out in the studio.
Yeah, so it's, you know, we owe a lot to them and to Danny and Andrea for sure, and to Mountain Home for taking on a band that nobody had ever heard of, you know. Like Michael said, we don't have family in this industry.
Nobody had ever played in another band.
This isn't James Keene's kids or this
right.
is, you know,
of course.
Somebody like that. So it's, you know, it's a big risk for a label to just take on a band without knowing what they're going to give them in return.
Well, it is a business proposition
after
all. Yeah, okay, well, that's really interesting. Now, I know your third album is out. Are you kind of, you talked about that a little bit in your set last night. Are you keeping with the number theme? Is this going to be 3 or also? Or
Where are we going with that? It's not titled yet, but
we'll
I'm thinking that we might stay away from the numbers, but you never know.
Okay.
We're a little crazy like that.
Okay, that's fun. Well, I know that you. Is everybody involved with teaching? Is that the case?
We are. Yeah. We do workshops a lot as a band.
Okay.
And then a few of us teach in a music studio. You know, when we're off the road, and we have had so many people growing up who taught us so many things, and
that's why I asked that question.
So much of what they knew, you know, not saying, hey, you got to have a set time and pay me for this lesson, you know, just sitting down and showing us things that they didn't have to, you know.
Right.
So for us to be able to kind of share that with the younger kids and maybe see some of them come up in the music and say, you know, those guys helped me, or those guys, you know, showed me this lick, or, you know, just spent time with us, or, you know, jammed with us, or
whatever.
Teach us
how to do.
Yeah.
Well, there's so many, you know, bands that have, you know, good instruments, great talent, they just don't know how to do.
Mm-hmm.
Danny and Andrew,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
they've been our window into this whole industry.
Okay.
You know? I mean,
yeah.
That's a big part of just knowing how to do when you're, you know, trying to get festivals. Record label, radio play, all that. They're the key to that.
Yeah.
Right.
You can't spend your whole life saying, I want to do that one day, and not prepare for it. When the opportunity comes, you've got
to be ready to play.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe one day we'll be somebody's Danny and Andrew. Who knows?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that's kind of how this thing works, right?
I mean, that's,
everybody started off emulating somebody.
Right.
And then they find their own voice, and away they go. That's any genre, that's how it works. Why do you guys think, and let's go around the horn here, why do you think that bluegrass is relevant in our modern, high-tech, messed-up world?
I feel like because it's a genuine and it's a real music. There's a lot of emotion and thought that goes into the music, and it's not just like a... I feel like a lot of the stuff that comes on the radio today, and we won't name any in particular artists or genres of music, but it's just they're chasing the fad.
Yes.
You know, of what's on, of what's out there to try to make a dollar.
Yeah.
And there's no soul in that kind of stuff. There's no soul in that music. When you have artists that really put thought and emotion and their actual own feelings and their life stories in their songs, then when they perform them or record them, you get such a more relatable experience and you can connect with somebody a lot more.
Yeah.
I feel like that's why bluegrass is so popular at this time, because people are really being able to relate to it.
Yeah. Thanks, Michael. Buddy, what do you have to say on that?
Well, obviously everything Michael said was true, but to me it's kind of... there's a... You know, it's not... There's a lot of computer-generated music.
Yes.
You know, there's a lot of artists that you could see them on the street and tell them to sing one of their songs and they couldn't do it.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Without pitch correction or all that stuff,
right,
you mean?
Yeah.
Or a high production behind.
Exactly.
Okay.
But yeah, to me, bluegrass is just... If you play bluegrass, there's at some point in your life, you've worked hard to do it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
If you learn how to play.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether you're born with a talent for music or not, there's still the blood, sweat, and tears part of it.
Isn't that right?
Yeah. So...
A friend of mine is a guitar teacher, and she has this chart on her wall, and it's kind of like an iceberg. It's got performance, it's this little tiny thing, and then the water, and then all the stuff that has to happen underneath, you know.
That's the
technique, learning how to play, all this stuff is all out of sight.
Right. And there's always somebody better, it seems like.
Well, that's the other thing, of course.
It doesn't matter how much you practice, how much
It usually happens after you have that stint where you're like, man, I feel like I'm doing pretty good right now.
Yeah.
And then you go to a festival, you're like, son of a gun.
Yeah. I really got some work to do.
You see a five-year-old kid that cannot pick you on guitar, then you're like, well, I quit.
Okay. Yeah, how about you, Charlie?
Well, I guess my favorite music... The people that I enjoy listening to most is real music. It's soulful. You feel like it means something to them. And I think you hear a lot of that with bluegrass and country music.
Yes.
Just like the people, the songs, the choices, the song choices that people choose in this music industry are my favorite.
Okay.
So that's, I think, real music. And now you'll see a lot of young people now. A lot more of them are wanting to learn bluegrass and country. Like, you go to Spigma and Ivy May, you see so many young people wanting to learn about it.
Is that about the themes of the lyrics, or is that about the sound? Or?
I think it's everything.
Okay.
It's about the way they sing it, that a lot of the song choices are because it means something to them. And you can tell it when they sing it and hear it in the recordings or live. Like, it's just... You know, like Del McCurry, Larry Sparks, you know.
It's pretty hard to fake.
It's
you can't fake Del McCurry.
No, you can't. And it's every time you
that
see it.
That should be a t-shirt.
It's always the same. It's always great music. And I just can't imagine not enjoying it, you know.
Right. Kelsey.
I would say that it makes it relevant now just because the people who are playing bluegrass are obviously in it because they like bluegrass, not because they are in it for the money.
Tens of dollars and over a year.
Definitely not in it for the money.
You know how you make $1 million playing bluegrass, don't you?
You start with two.
Yeah,
I get that.
So, you know, you go to these places and people are here playing music because they chose to do that. They didn't get roped into it. They didn't get there and say, you know, well, heck, I didn't think I wanted to do this. I didn't do this as much as I thought I wanted to, you know?
Right.
And so it's, for me, I enjoy that part of it, you know, the most, because I know that the people who are around have the same in common as we do. You know, they enjoy the music, and like I said, they're in it because they love it, and not because they need to make a dollar.
So yeah.
I think that's a huge lesson to learn for some people, is no matter whether you're getting paid a lot or whether you're getting paid, you know, like you said, tens of dollars for playing bluegrass, you've got to like what you're doing or it's work.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. How about you, Paul?
Bluegrass is...
That's good. Dominant?
Bluegrass is a very unique genre. I mean, just in the last 70 years, it's come a long way. But in some way or another, it seems like every band still has that roots feel like it started out with.
Okay.
You know, no matter how...
Even though they're pushing the boundaries.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
And I feel like it's just a very raw, unique sound. It has so much breath to it. You know, it's actually moving air from the instrument. You know, it's not plugging up to an amp or anything like that. You know,
yes.
Which is nothing wrong with that.
Yes.
But it's a great natural sound. And I think the pickers in bluegrass are much more sophisticated than people give them credit for.
That's certainly true.
I feel like a lot of bluegrass people can play a lot of other genres, but a lot of people from other genres can't nail down the bluegrass.
Right.
You know, it's just...
Right.
I think there's a lot of very talented people in the bluegrass world that are very versatile in a lot of different things.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Dominic?
I think a big part of it is bluegrass is beginning to be such a trendy thing, you know? And in the social media area, it's like it's getting as big as, you know, some country music and other kinds of genres.
Okay.
Bluegrass is starting to use social media, and obviously that's, you know, the biggest thing going on, you know, in the world right now is social media and electronics and all that. So
yeah.
I feel like the fact that bluegrass is connecting with a lot of that stuff, it's just opened it up to just be bigger and bigger, you know.
Okay, well, that opens me up to another question that I've asked a couple of other bands. What do you guys feel about audio streaming sites? Is that something you like, or you know, it's pretty controversial for a lot of people.
It's kind of a bummer just because of the way it's designed and everything.
That it's not monetized, that you're
right. But at the same time, I mean, we're in the 21st century. I mean, things are gonna change. You know,
yeah.
we're not buying cassette tapes anymore.
Right.
You know,
it's convenient.
It is
not
very
always
convenient.
A good thing.
Yeah,
I agree. But still, you know, when we play shows, we still sell a lot of CDs.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. It's, I think in a way, I don't like it, but at the same time, it helps us reach out to a lot of people that might not hear about us.
People have to come to the show
exactly.
To buy the CD or
but to... But they might see us on iTunes
okay,
or Spotify or something like
okay.
That, and they've never heard of us before.
Right.
And they might become a fan, and,
yeah.
You know, who knows from that?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So it's just a way to reach a broader audience. That makes a lot of sense.
I mean, I definitely, you know, agree with the frustration of it, you know, with the frustration of the musicians and the artists and things like that who feel like they've put in all the work and then everybody else gets to benefit for...
Well, like hundreds of a cent, I think, for playing something silly.
Yeah, I know that BMI, I think, just won some kind of a battle with Spotify, maybe, or one of the streaming... no, it was Pandora.
Okay.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
And they got it up to, like, 2.5% or something like
right.
That, which sounds like nothing, but...
It's a huge
improvement.
You know,
it's a huge
sure.
Deal for them and for all the artists that are with them. So I have a love-hate relationship with it. You know, I know how convenient it is,
yes.
And I like that part of it, but... Then again, we have a lot of convenience in this world that isn't such a great thing. So
I tend to agree with that one, yeah.
The best way to look at it is just, you know, it's another way to get your name out there for people to
yes.
Learn about you.
And a lot of these sites that I've been on, it says, you know, you're listening to something and it'll suggest other bands that are
right.
Kind of in that
right.
General sound and area, and that might be helpful
sure.
Somehow.
Well, that's kind of a side thing. I was listening to... I think it was Ricky Skaggs one day, and it suggested our band. And
wow.
I thought that was kind of cool.
Is it ever?
Yeah.
A lot of people listen to Ricky Skaggs.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm torn on it myself. That's why I ask you guys, because I know there's virtually no compensation for the artist, but maybe it leads to
it's so tiered,
other opportunities.
The people at the top are making the money.
Yeah.
like the top artists. They're the ones that are making the money. So you can't really fight it, though. That's the thing. There's not really much we can do.
I mean, but there's some upset too, though.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, right. Swift took all of her stuff off
did
Spotify.
She?
Yeah, I mean, you know, people like that who can't afford to do that. You know what
I'm
saying?
Yeah, I
totally she's out there already.
Of course.
Everybody in
she's
the world knows
she's got more money than you probably ever
is.
Spent.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, I mean, so, and I'm not hating that.
Of course.
Obviously, I would love to be in her shoes. I wouldn't.
To be able to.
Right. I mean, she's worked
it right
for
now.
It just like we're working
of course.
For what we're doing. So, but, you know, like you were saying, I mean, people know who she is. And we're trying to get our name out there. I mean, if we were to say we're taking all of our stuff off Spotify, it might come across as who do they think they are kind of a thing. You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean?
Yeah,
and,
that's
you know,
a tough one.
If you don't want to get your name out there, then you must not want it that bad.
Or somebody could look at it as a thing where if it was between two bands and we were one of them and this band has their album on Spotify and we don't, then they're going to go listen to that other band's album and maybe like it and then go buy it and then they would never even listen to us because
right.
it wasn't on Spotify
wasn't
for free
yeah.
or for whatever, you know.
Yeah, that's the risk you run, I guess, about not playing that game.
It's such
yeah.
a, it's not a black and white
of course,
area at all.
Of course. I'm just curious about your take yeah. on it because everybody has a different idea on how that goes. I really wanted to mention that I listened to Dangerous Dan. Tim Stafford's been here a couple of times, and he's a good friend of this festival. And the quote that he had on the website is, "They pass the ultimate music litmus test. They sound awesome on record and just as good live. Flat Lonesome is the real deal. They are all good people on top of it all. Or they are good people on top of
that
it all." That's
us,
high praise from a...
It cost a lot of money for us to get
did
that.
It? Did it? Yeah.
We're still paying that one off.
Are you? But just to come from such an iconic songwriter
sure.
and
sure.
picker, that is really
Tim
something.
Tim is awesome, and I think that is...
whole band is.
Maybe,
yeah.
yes.
maybe the band for us that when we're talking
right.
about what
is
if
it?
We ever get to play a festival that they're at, that is... all of us are like number one Blue Highway fans.
Yes.
And for us to be able to record a Tim Stafford song and for us to be at festivals or any, I mean, we saw Tim Stafford in a restaurant the other day. I mean, for them to come up to us and know our names and talk to us and, you know, for Tim Stafford to mention us on stage saying that we recorded one of his songs and all that, it's just kind of overwhelming.
I
mean,
it is.
We are not. We don't feel, I know with this, I can speak for all of us because we've talked about it. We don't feel like we're worthy of that
mm-hmm.
yet, you know, and I don't know if we ever will just because of how fast it's all happened and how accepting everybody has been. And people like Blue Highway almost kind of taking us in and befriending us and not trying to say, you know, who are you and where'd you come from, you know?
Or, like, you got to learn it on your own like we
exactly.
did.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
But
so
just a band that's been together for so long. I think Jason was out for a while and then he came
right.
back.
They've been,
you know?
They've been together longer than a couple of us have been alive.
Yeah. There you go. That's
it's,
really significant to me.
It's huge. And we love those guys so much. They've been so good to us. And a lot of,
oh,
you
yeah.
know, many bands have. But that's one band that we kind of have personal relationships with.
Right.
That, you know, we can be with them and, you know, let loose, joke around, and we got to actually play on stage with them for the first time a couple of weeks ago.
Oh yeah!
So that and that was so much fun. So,
where was that?
Rocky Top.
Oh yeah, great.
So it was their very first, their first annual festival. So
okay.
We were there with Blue Highway and of course Bobby Osborne because it's in Rocky Top.
Yeah.
And so that was very cool. Yeah, the Boxcars were there too. So
okay.
They're on, we're on the same label.
Same label.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we got to play with both of those bands. Actually on stage with them in the same weekend. So
that's big stuff.
Yeah, that was awesome.
I bet. Well, maybe we can we talked about this a little bit, but maybe we'll just go around the circle and ask you guys what pickers or singers inspired you and got you going.
It's a long list.
Yeah, of course.
Well,
we got time.
As a dobro player, number one for me would definitely have to be Jerry Douglas.
Yes.
He's not only my favorite dobro player, he's my favorite musician.
Okay.
Out of anybody.
He's
yeah.
such a cool guy.
He connects, I can connect to the way he plays emotionally more than I can anybody else.
Rob Ikes included?
Rob Ikes is unbelievable. He's definitely number two for me.
Okay.
But there's just something about how Jerry Douglas plays. And sometimes he doesn't even play like just the most grand, intricate lick.
Right.
It'll just be one note he'll put in one section of the song, and it'll make me almost wreck my car if I'm driving.
Because it's just so perfect.
Because it's perfect. You know,
yeah.
He's just, And then as far as, I guess, bands, Blue Highway, I'd have to say is definitely up there for me.
Yeah.
I listened to Ricky Skaggs constantly when I was young. Doyle Lawson, of course. All that was the Grascals.
Yeah.
Love them. Balsam Range is big for us.
Yes.
But Jerry Douglas, as far as an individual, as a dobro player myself, has got to be number one for me.
Because he's stepping out of bluegrass tradition?
I love what he does because I like to play lap steel too, and he plays lap steel a lot when he steps out, so that's awesome for me.
Right.
And then I guess I'd probably have to put, everybody's got to have, if you play bluegrass music, you cannot say that you were not influenced by Tony Rice.
Of course.
Even if you don't play the guitar. Just the way he plays, the way he carries himself, song selection, stuff like that. So, definitely him.
Great. How about you, buddy?
Well, I started playing banjo in the band. So I didn't start playing guitar till I was in the band till I was probably 18.
Yeah, I think that's what I remember.
Yeah, I was about 18 years old. And the thing that got me actually wanting to play guitar was a guy named Tony Ray.
Yeah.
He plays with Blue Mafia.
Okay.
He's a...
You saw him live, or...?
Yeah, well, the first time I heard him was on Danny Roberts, the mandolin player for the Grascals.
Okay.
He's got an instrumental album called Mandolin Orchard.
Okay.
And he played guitar on that album, and the guitar work on that is incredible.
Phew!
And I just remember listening to that album and saying, I want to play like him.
Okay.
And I still don't, but he's what got me really wanting to play guitar. And there's kind of a... I got bit by the bug, I guess. And so that's, when I started playing guitar, it was all Tony Ray. That's all I wanted to play.
Okay.
And now me and Tony are really good, close friends. And he's helped me out a lot.
Great.
Yeah, a good bit on guitar.
Technical stuff or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's anything really. I mean, I can call him to this day and anything I need to. But he's awesome. He's an incredible musician. I think he's one of the best in the world, in my opinion.
Okay. How about bands?
Bluegrass album band. I listened to a lot of bluegrass album band.
Yeah.
Growing up. That's probably my number one.
Okay.
I mean, that sounds really cliche, obviously, but bluegrass album band. Some of the Tony Rice unit stuff was really cool.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. My mind's going blank now. But I listen to a lot of Ricky Skaggs.
Okay.
We have some throwback videos on YouTube
that I like to.
Before his voice checks.
Yeah. But, yeah, Ricky Skaggs and Kentucky Thunder. Alison Krauss from Union Station, obviously.
Of course.
I really like Dan Tominski's lead singing, obviously. You know, and that first Dan Tominski Band album came out.
Okay.
I love that album.
Yeah.
That's
a pretty good list.
Oh, yeah.
How about you, Charlie?
Well, there's obviously so many. I hate to even say, I feel like I'm leaving people out when I pick one, but I tried to study Bobby Hicks because I love that traditional playing.
Yeah.
I really like Aubrey Haney. He's a good guy, too, in person. We hear him a lot. I go out to Station Inn on Monday nights a lot just to hear him play. It's really great. Stuart Duncan.
Yes.
They're all of them are great. There's so many that I like, but those are just a few that I really enjoy. As for bands and singing, obviously for bluegrass, I first remember listening to Alison Krauss, and she's great. But as I grew up and started singing, I love country music so much in the style, the singing, and I really got into Leanne Womack. Her singing is my favorite. I love her style. Everything about it, honestly. And that's obviously very country.
Yes.
And we obviously play bluegrass, but I listen to obviously Rhonda Vincent too.
Sure.
There's several. I love Tammy Wynette.
Okay.
I love country music a lot. So.
But more female vocalists?
Oh,
obviously
I'm not
you're
all
moved
about,
by
well, for,
George Jones, for instance.
Yes, I mean, I listen to guys singing all the time. I mean, to Merle Haggard, George Jones, Dwight Yoakam's one of my favorites.
Okay.
She likes some French jeans, though.
Yeah. yes.
Yeah, his whole family could sing.
I'm leaving people out, but I like Tim O'Brien. I'm a huge fan of Tim O'Brien.
Okay.
Yeah, good choice.
Can I put him tone. On too? Is it too
sure,
late?
Sure, yeah.
I like good tone, and he's got a completely different style than really anybody.
He does,
he really...
Good old Hot Rise.
Yeah, Hot Rise. Great band.
Yeah.
Love that band. Yeah, that's...
Can we
thanks.
Do some real boogie later?
Ricky Skaggs is a huge, I think, and we're all huge fans of him.
Okay.
So,
the bluegrass side.
Everybody. Yes.
I can't tell you how many times we've been traveling down the road going to a gig, and we put on the Ricky Skaggs Live at Charleston.
Oh, my
God. And listen to
yeah.
the whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
and everybody's
probably,
in, everybody else
oh,
is.
Yes.
Probably more than 30
your
times.
Phone's
wow.
out and everybody's
wow.
The whole
mm-hmm.
thing.
That's a big thing. That's significant.
It's a big
wow.
Ricky Skaggs doing Sally Joe will just make me want to scratch somebody's face off.
Yeah.
Oh, and that's intense.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
In a very loving way.
You're not a big scratcher. So.
No, I'm not usually one to scratch people.
How about your influences?
Vocally, Alison Krauss is number one for me.
Number one?
Number
wow.
One. I don't sing anything like her, obviously. I have a very low voice. But
yeah.
She and her Lonely Runs Both Ways album is the reason why I wanted to sing.
Okay.
And the reason that, or the album that got me into it was because she knows how to feel a song that she's singing.
Right.
And if she's singing a, you know, a hurting song, it makes you hurt with it, and that's what I wanted. I wanted people to feel what I was singing and believe that I had gone through that, whether I had or not. I mean, you
of
know,
of course, yeah,
it's just,
yeah.
You know, whether it's just like acting or you
of
know,
of course.
So that was she's number one for me, always will be.
Okay.
And I don't think there's any need to list any other vocalists. I don't think other than Alison. She
that's strong,
her,
huh?
Her 100 Miles or More album, which isn't a Union Station album, it's just a collaboration of different people.
Okay.
Carl Jackson produced it, and he is incredible.
Good friend of ours.
Very good friend
oh,
of
yeah.
ours. He's really, really been a good friend to us and helped us out a lot as well. But that 100 Miles or More album is on my top 10, I think, for sure. And Mandolin... Number one has to be Danny Roberts.
Okay.
Just for one, because of how much he's mentored me and helped me. He was the first person I had help me on mandolin, other than, you know, we took lessons from a fiddle player, which Charlie played fiddle, obviously.
Right.
But I did not, but I took lessons from a fiddle player. I mean, it all notes the same, you know, but it's
sure.
still different than having somebody who actually plays mandolin teach you to play. So Danny helped me out. Or tried to help me out quite a few times, and he said, you know, he felt bad, he felt like I just wasn't getting it, and he said he finally tried, you know, some Monroe style stuff and tried to show me some of that, see how I liked it, and lots of downstrokes, and you know, he said it's like a light came on and it just
no
clicked
kidding.
With me. So now I probably play too many downstrokes, but
no such thing.
I guess, you know, there are worse habits to have than playing lots of downstrokes, but Danny Roberts, Sam Bush, I would, yeah,
easy.
Move on from Sam. Sam is one of those people that no matter how many times I meet him or am around him, I will be nervous every day.
Okay.
He is just, he will be nervous. Right. He's that guy. He's just, he's got it. He's
yeah.
so cool. And he, you know, he doesn't have to talk.
Still in here.
Kind of like Johnny
oh, okay.
Cash. He was
first.
Just cool.
Yeah.
Whether he was on stage or what, you know, doing whatever.
Right.
So Danny Roberts and Sam Bush and Bill Monroe.
Great.
I love
great.
The old Bill Monroe stuff.
Yeah.
So that's me.
How about you, Paul?
As a banjo player, of course, Earl Scruggs, J.D. Crowe, you know, the
yeah.
old guys who kind of pioneered the whole banjo. I really like Ron Block.
Okay.
He's a huge inspiration for me. Jim Mills as well.
Yes.
Noam Pakelny's great. He's,
okay.
he's kind of, I guess, newer to the scene
yeah.
than anyone else. Bela Fleck. Ron Stewart's great.
Yeah.
And there's just a whole list of others. We were talking about Ricky Skaggs a minute ago. I mean, that's probably my first taste of bluegrass music was, you know, that Bluegrass Rules album.
Okay, yes.
And I love that, all of his country stuff.
Country rocks,
bluegrass
rules.
We can sing the whole album for real quick.
Yeah.
But yeah, all of his bluegrass stuff, even his country stuff's great.
Yeah.
Very great sound. Tony Rice was a huge inspiration for me as well. He
okay.
has a great feel for everything that he's ever done, always good taste in music.
Yeah.
Michael said Jerry Douglas, I mean, he's not a banjo player, but the way he feels songs and, like, gets that emotion with the song, it's very inspiring to, you know, any kind of player, whatever they play.
Those are kind of individuals. How about bands?
Bands, well, she said Alison Krauss and Union Station. I think that's one of everybody's favorites.
Okay.
Bluegrass Album Band. Buddy Robertson, he's...
Thank you.
Oh, he's not a band anymore.
Never mind, take him out.
And the rest of them.
Blue Highway, yeah. Like we mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
I really like the Old Lonesome River Band when it was Sammy Sheeler, Dan Tominski, Ronnie Bowman, and Tim Austin.
Okay.
That was that was a pretty stinking good group. And a lot of the old Bill Lawson stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was great as well.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, I know Buddy does as well. All of us do, really. Obviously, we listen to a lot of classic country.
Sure.
You can probably tell a lot of that in their singing and the playing and arrangements. Buddy can't always, but...
Dominic does a great Willie Nelson.
We love classic country. We love, you know, good steel guitar, all that. As far as bluegrass, I know all of us, myself as well, listen to a lot of Del McCurry.
Of course.
Larry Sparks.
Yeah.
Osborne Brothers, you know.
Yeah.
We've even got a Jicky Osborne Brothers ending on one of our songs on the new CD. So we love all of those people. Obviously, Blue Highway, you know, we all listen to a lot of the same things when it comes to that. The Grascals, all those guys. As far as bass, I always tell people there's so many good bass players. It's hard to really pick. Obviously, Barry Bales,
yes.
As far as currently people that, you know, play. If you're going to go back and look at, like, legendary people, I guess Roy Husky and Roy Husky Jr.
Yes.
I mean, you know. And Bob Moore, I guess,
the country side of it,
big upright country player, still plays, actually.
Yeah.
I guess those are a couple of the older generation kind of people
that you really listen to.
Mike Bubb's a great bass player,
yes.
Alan Bartram. Those are more current guys that I really like. Harold Nixon with the Boxcars. There's just so many great bass players, you know.
Andrea Roberts,
yeah, she's of course.
Petticoat Junction, all
right. So is that about their tone, their feel, or what do you get?
Knowing when to do what,
yeah.
You know, less is more when it comes to bass.
Yeah.
Most of those people just know how to do.
Yeah, they know how to do, you know, it's all about knowing how to do, and when it comes to bass, knowing how to do is...
It's key.
Either, you know,
it's what you
putting
do.
A certain walk in this spot,
or
not putting a certain
right.
walk in the spot. You
right.
don't want to cover up things.
Don't be too busy.
Like cover up a key part, like a vocal or
especially
a break, a
six piece,
or
that's
a fill.
Easy.
You know, it really is less is more.
Yeah.
You know, when it comes to bass, it's not about you know, how many walks you can do or how fast you can do a walk or how many solos you know.
Right.
I don't even know if I technically know a solo on the bass. I mean, but it hasn't hurt me so far. So, you know.
Yeah, go with it. Yeah, that's great. Maybe you guys can talk a little bit about what you have coming up.
Bean Blossom.
Oh, how exciting.
Yes.
We get home, we're off the plane for like 2 days, and then we go straight to Bean Blossom.
Wow.
And then after that, we go to Rudy Fest.
Rudy Fest,
which is
a
big one for us.
That's in Grayson, Kentucky.
Okay.
Pretty big festival.
And we have...
We're playing a show with we're opening up for the Punch Brothers later this year.
Oh, no kidding.
We're pretty excited
awesome.
About that.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Of course, we'll be at the MAC later on this year, Musicians Against Childhood Cancer.
If you haven't been to the MAC, that's the place to be.
I don't know
great.
About
that. All the proceeds go to St. Jude's Children's Hospital.
Pretty much everyone's there.
Okay.
It's a great
festival. Not the typical festival where you've got the lesser-known bands on Wednesday and Thursday, and then, you know,
right.
there is...
It's like all headliners.
Every single band is good.
And where's that?
Every day.
It's in
Ohio.
Columbus, Ohio.
Okay.
Yeah. So I don't even know how we got to get in the festival. It's all headliners, but we
you're there. How exciting!
We're actually doing a set at the MAC with the alternative string band from one of the. It's the high school, right?
Yeah, it's a group of kids that are classical musicians.
Violinists and cellists. Yeah. Okay. And stuff like that.
So they work on a couple of our songs and we'll go up there and play it with them, which will be pretty
neat. Fun.
We had Red, White, and Bluegrass, of course, this year. IBMA will be over there. We're playing at the Red Hat Amphitheater this year.
Okay.
At IBMA for the, what do they call that section? The Wide Open Bluegrass, yeah.
Yeah. Big thing there.
Pretty excited about that. And then right about that time, hopefully the album will be coming out.
Okay.
Hopefully, we'll see.
To be continued.
Tentative.
Yeah. Takes way longer than you expect, I'm sure. Right?
And this, I mean, if before this trip, if somebody asked us what big things we had coming up,
this was
the Yukon. I mean,
is that right?
This is our,
for a year, you know, we've been talking about this.
Our
no joke.
big thing.
If you set music aside for me, this area has been like my number one place on bucket list to come to.
And no kidding.
Forget music, just to come up here.
So you'd actually heard of the Yukon before?
Oh, the Yukon for sure. No, I haven't. I can't lie, I haven't heard of Haines Junction.
I'm shocked, man.
We'll actually be in Whitehorse later this year.
Yeah, is that right?
I'm just kidding.
I flew over here on a plane one time.
Did you?
Yeah.
Going to Alaska?
No, he's kidding.
You're kidding.
You can't believe anything.
Virtually nothing.
The longer the interview goes on, the worse we will get.
Okay, okay. Well, maybe we should wrap it up then. And just give us a taste of what our audience can expect from Flat Lonesome this weekend.
This weekend? Lots of shenanigans, yes.
I mean, what can they expect? What do you guys bring?
There's going to be...
Yes,
lots of CDs.
I'm thinking music.
We usually have a couple instruments.
We brought our instruments with us.
Okay, that's good.
Clothes.
No, we'll be doing, tonight for sure, we're going to be doing lots of, we're going to try to do some stuff off of the first album.
Okay.
We still really enjoy doing the Osborne Brothers, you know, My Favorite Memory and Jackson and that kind of stuff. So, but we also, I think like they heard, a lot of the people heard last night, we try to put a lot of the old classic country into our sets too.
Right.
So, and we have fun with it. I mean, you were there, I think.
I was.
You saw what we do. And
yes.
I don't know
if there's another band in bluegrass that has more fun than us. If we can't say anything else,
it's a blast.
I promise
you. We might not sound very good.
Yeah.
Well, it was really fun for me to hear Dominic encouraging everybody and yelling. It's kind of like he's the quarterback or something.
He is,
like
for sure he is. Yes.
That's really fun.
I just try to see how many of them I can make laugh while they're singing.
Just to make them laugh.
I got Buddy Good last night. So.
I got the trophy for that 2 weeks ago. We were on stage in Virginia. And we were ending the show, we were holding those notes out, and I could not hold it in anymore, and I sneezed right into the mic. And we couldn't even make
it. I was laughing so
hard. It was
on a downbeat.
Yes.
That's hilarious. Why we didn't even finish the last note, because Buddy was like double over laughing.
Down,
down,
down, down.
Was this one ever
You were there.
I think I was on vacation.
Okay.
Yes, you were on vacation.
Well, thanks, you guys. I really appreciate you spending this time chatting with me. I absolutely appreciate it very much. And thanks for being here.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to a conversation Steve Gedrose had with the six members of the bluegrass band Flat Lonesome. We recorded this event at the 2015 Kluane Mountain Bluegrass Festival in Haines Junction, Yukon. This and other interviews with bands performing at this festival are also available on our website, junctionjam.ca. Just click the Jam Live link. We would like to thank the Yukon Bluegrass Music Society for all their support. Also, a big thank you to Steve Gedrose for preparing and conducting the interview. This show is brought to you by Junction Arts and Music, written and produced by Dieter Gade, and I am Maria Leniak. Ciao till next time.